From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, October 5th, 2015. And on this day, anxiety is high at Maine Maritime Academy as the search continues for the El Faro crew, four of them graduates of the Castine School. Two LePage administration officials are refusing to appear before a legislative panel looking into allegations that the governor threatened to withhold funds for an organization that tried to hire a political rival. And the disappearing tradition of harvest break in Maine's potato country. That and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by listeners like you and by Lee Auto Malls, serving Maine since 1936 and a proud supporter of MPBN Radio, with locations throughout the state and online at leeauto.com.
I'm Barbara Caridi. In Castine, students and faculty at Maine Maritime Academy held a solemn meeting late this afternoon as Coast Guard crews continued searching for survivors from the cargo ship El Faro. The vessel is believed to have sunk during Hurricane Joaquin in the waters northeast of the Bahamas. Four Mainers, all graduates of MMA, are among the 33 missing crew members, Jay Field reports.
The meeting came at the end of an anxious day on the Maine Maritime campus in Castine. It began with students, faculty, and college officials closely monitoring the U.S. Coast Guard's morning news conference from Florida and expressing hope that members of the El Faro's crew would still be found alive.
Now I want to talk to you as members of a shared community.
Little had changed by the time William Brennan, MMA's president, stepped to a lectern inside the Harold Alphonse Student Center at 4 p.m.
This is a family. We are one community. We are all mariners, and I know we are distressed by what we heard today.
MMA students, appearing shaken, listened intently as Brennan recapped what officials had learned from the earlier Coast Guard briefing. The ship is assumed to have sunk. Search and rescue teams have found a damaged lifeboat with no one in it and a survival suit with an unidentified body inside. An official crew list has yet to be released, but Brennan confirmed what has been widely reported by various media outlets.
Four Mainers have been identified in the media as possibly members of the crew, and all four are graduates of Maine Maritime Academy.
They are Mike Davidson, El Faro's captain, who graduated in 1988, Danielle Randolph, a 2005 MMA graduate, Mike Holland from the class of 2012, and Dylan Mecklen, who completed his studies this past spring.
We are reaching out to the students we believe to have family connections to the crew to offer support to the families.
Brennan encouraged students to visit with counselors on campus to talk about what they're feeling. In interviews earlier in the day, students expressed confidence in the training and skills their fellow MMA sailors were likely forced to use as conditions on the El Faro grew worse. Gabrielle Wells is a senior from Cape Elizabeth.
Right. So from day one, when we enter Maine Maritime, we do survival, basically. So we put immersion suits on. We have a pool. We actually have a life raft that we practice getting into. We jump off the ship.
As the meeting ended, several students embraced each other in tears. Maine Maritime Academy will hold a vigil for the missing sailors tomorrow night. In the meantime, President Brennan asked students to lean on each other, open up to teachers, and not give up hope. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
Two members of the LePage administration are declining to appear before a legislative panel. The panel is reviewing allegations that Governor Paul LePage threatened to withhold funding for a private organization that tried to hire a political opponent, Maine House Speaker Mark Eaves. LePage's chief legal counsel, Cynthia Montgomery, has written to the legislature's Government Oversight Committee saying she and another aide, Aaron Chadbourne, must respectfully decline the invitation to appear before the committee next week because of a pending lawsuit. Mal Leary reports.
A recent fact-finding report concluded that the LePage administration withheld money from the Goodwill Hinckley School after learning that the private school hired Democratic House Speaker Mark Eaves as its president. The board of the school later rescinded Eaves' job offer. Now members of the government oversight panel want to know more about the events leading up to Eaves' dismissal and about the decision to withhold money. They also want to question LePage administration staff about any related internal communications. Augusta Senator Roger Cates, a Republican, co-chairs the panel.
We are in uncharted waters here, where one branch of government has decided it doesn't want to have its people come before a legislative committee.
In her letter, Montgomery says because the committee wants to get information about issues also raised in a federal lawsuit brought by Eaves against the governor, staff will not participate in the hearing. That disturbs the panel's co-chairman, Democratic Representative Chuck Krueger of Thomaston. In a written statement, he says, quote, "We understand that the governor faces a lawsuit as a private citizen, but what's at stake here is much bigger than that, the integrity of our political system." The panel could subpoena the governor's staff to testify, an option that worries members of both parties. Senator Cates.
I don't know whether the committee will even consider subpoenas. It would take a majority vote of the committee to even do that. And then, of course, any witness who's been issued a subpoena has the right to go to court to attempt to quash that subpoena.
And that could lead to prolonged legal arguments and could likely end up before the state Supreme Court, given the nature of the subpoenas. That is, one branch of government seeking to compel members from another branch of government to testify before them. Windham Senator Bill Diamond, a Democrat and longtime member of the legislature, says he has never seen a situation like this one, and he hopes it does not come to the Government Oversight Committee having to issue subpoenas to members of the governor's staff.
I, for one, would hope that we didn't have to use that, have to exercise that piece. I think it's important that that the governor's office and his legal counsel in particular understand that this is very serious. We take it very serious. It's a bipartisan effort.
In her letter, Montgomery offers to try to answer any specific questions in writing, but Diamond says that is not a substitute for the give and take of a committee hearing.
Oftentimes, if not most times, when you're a committee member and you ask a question, hear somebody else ask, when it leads to further inquiries and further questions arise as a result of it. So to make it complete, it really does need to be a face-to-face.
The committee is meeting next week and will likely discuss the governor's response to their request and options for proceeding. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
Meanwhile, lawmakers and state agencies in Maine have submitted more than 400 requests for bills for the legislative session that begins in January. The bills are just titles at this point, but they include changes to Maine's gun laws and efforts to free up voter-approved bonds that Governor LePage has been withholding. The bills must be approved by the Legislative Council, and some of them are likely to be rejected. The deadline to submit bill titles was September 25th. Maine Chief Justice Lee Sofley says the judicial branch is proposing to increase the pay for lawyers who represent children, in some cases, to the same level as lawyers representing adults.
Simple, straightforward effort to assure that attorneys who represent children in child protective proceedings are paid at exactly the same level as attorneys who represent the adults.
Sofley says it was an oversight that has left those representing children feeling as though they are less valued than those representing adults. Saco Democratic Representative Barry Hobbins, co-chair of the legislature's Judiciary Committee, agrees and is praising Sofley for proposing the legislation. A new poll of 500 Mainers indicates that a majority supports Planned Parenthood. The poll, by Washington, D.C.-based Heart Research Associates, asked voters from across the state whether they favor a proposal by Republicans in Congress to end government funding for Planned Parenthood after secretly recorded, heavily edited videos claimed to show the organization profiting from the sale of fetal tissue. The poll was conducted by live interviewers and included respondents on landlines, cellular, and voice-over IP phones. It was paid for by the Planned Parenthood Action Fund and has a margin of error of 4.5 percentage points. On this day, members of the group Mercy for Animals protested in front of a Portland McDonald's, bringing along a 7-foot chicken to help make their case for the fast food giant and nation's second largest purchaser of poultry to adopt better animal welfare policies. Cars slowed down to look at graphic images of abused animals, and some honked their horns in support. Earlier this year, Mercy for Animals released graphic hidden camera footage of cruelty to chickens at a Tyson Foods plant in Tennessee. Tyson was one of McDonald's suppliers of chicken meat, but the company has since cut its ties with that plant. But Mercy for Animals National Campaign Coordinator Jenny Haynes says those practices weren't limited to that one plant.
The practices carried out by this farm are pretty standard within the industry. Right now, McDonald's has no animal welfare policy that actually addresses broiler chickens. So we're asking them to adopt a comprehensive policy so that these things can't continue happening.
The action in Portland is part of a nationwide tour and series of demonstrations that Mercy for Animals is undertaking to call attention to the issue. And that side of fries on your plate may have been harvested by a child. For generations, students in northern Maine have been let out of school for harvest break to help bring in Aroostook County's potato crop. Jennifer Mitchell recently visited the community of Easton, where the school district still shuts down for a 3-week recess, even though there's just one family left in town that's still farming potatoes.
While other 14-year-olds across the country are slamming lockers and rushing to health class, Carson Flewelling has an enormous responsibility. He's in charge of the harvester for the first time, bringing in some 700 acres of russet potatoes, his family's income for the season.
This controls the speed of your boom, which way your boom moves. Your spade is what scoops the potatoes up, and your coulters cut the tops.
Of all the kids in the small town of Easton, population 1,200, he and his little brother Kyle are the only kids whose family still farms potatoes.
This one is your rock conveyor. You control the speed, and the rock box is dumped with a button on back of here.
If you find it challenging to drive a stick shift, it's a bit humbling to see a kid not yet old enough to shave handling a huge piece of machinery capable of churning up 6 rows of spuds at a time. It's a machine that can kill in an instant, and if Carson does it wrong, he could ruin the family crop. But it's the very gravity of this responsibility that makes harvest break so valuable, says Carson's father, Brent Flewelling. He says kids today should be given real-world responsibility.
They go from high school, they go to college, and then they got to go out in the workforce and find out what it's like. It's a total different experience. It's a good opportunity. More kids should have this chance.
But they're not really taking it, says another member of the family, Bruce Flewelling, whose 1,000-acre farm is just up the road. He says a kid who works for him can earn anywhere from $800 to nearly $2,000 for the 3-week harvest break. But this season has been a disappointment. Only 4 kids signed up to work the crew.
Families during the harvest break go on vacations. Before that never happened. When harvest was here, it was harvest.
But it's not surprising, really, says Flewelling. So many families have gotten out of the farming business altogether that the town has almost completely lost touch with its roots. And he says hiring migrant labor for such a short, fast season isn't practical. While mechanization has slashed the need to bring in extra help, Flewelling says he still needs several pairs of hands each season, but these days, those hands are more likely to be playing Angry Birds than volunteering to sort potatoes.
Now it's just another summer break, as far as I can see.
And this worries Kevin Marquis, who runs the local Future Farmers of America chapter.
That was one of the things that set young people in Aroostook County apart from a lot of children over the years, was they understood the value of a dollar.
On paper, Marquis says he has well over 100 students enrolled in FFA. But in practice, only a couple dozen show up for the programs. He says one of the things FFA struggles to teach is business sense and fiscal responsibility. And getting a student to work on a potato farm was always an effective teaching tool, he says.
And when you started out on your knees picking potatoes for 25 or 30 cents a barrel, and that money was to go to your winter clothes, when you went to the store, you were very, very astute about how much money you were paying for something. You weren't interested in what the brand name was on it. You wanted to know how far you could make that money go.
I'm Kyle.
That's 12-year-old Kyle Flewelling, Carson's little brother.
I mean, when you make your own money, do you think you're less likely to spend it, or are you more careful with it, do you think?
More careful with it than anything.
Did you save some of the money you made?
Yeah, I save half of it. And then the other half gets blown on a whole bunch of stuff.
I try to save more than half, but most of the time it's just half.
While the boys at age 12 and 14 can earn a wage on their family farm and work long hours, modern labor laws mean that their friends must wait until they're 16 years old to work the break anyway. Just a few decades ago, it wasn't uncommon for a farm to employ a 10 or a 12-year-old to pick potatoes, a practice that raised some concerns over the use of child labor. Carson and Kyle say a few of their friends seem interested in working when they come of age, but most say they would rather stay home and sleep in.
I think there probably is sufficient evidence to make any case you want to make.
There are arguments on both sides of the question of whether harvest breaks still makes any sense for a town like Easton, says Superintendent of Schools Roger Shaw. But primarily, he says, complaints from parents have more to do with the onus of juggling childcare and babysitters over the break period than anything else.
I'm much more concerned with what goes on in the classroom, the 175 days that we have students attending our school, than I am with whether the three-week harvest break is good or bad.
Shaw says he can discern no difference in graduation rates, test scores, or performance to other districts that have no harvest break. And he agrees with the FFA's marquee that work experience can teach something that the school can't. But still, it's a tradition that's under constant scrutiny now that so few families in the region are farming. And he says he wouldn't be surprised to see a day when the harvest break goes the way of the horse and cart, just a fond memory of another time. For MPBN News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
Speed up or slow it down, and when you're on a side hill, the harvester tilts.
And that's the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, October 5th, 2015. Our theme music was composed by Robert Holt. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall and Susan Sharon, and to Jay Field, Mal Leary, Jennifer Mitchell, Nora Flaherty, Ed Morin, and Patty White for their contributions to the program. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at MPBN News, thanks for listening.